Welcome, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. I am Joe Danya, and I'm host of this program for entrepreneurs, kind of luring some of you off of the sidelines to get involved and busy in creating, endeavors. Root word of an entrepreneur is someone who will undertake something, and usually their ideas big and small, but it's people who live for the moment of creation. And so we run this program giving you a simple place to be able to talk about your ideas, ask questions, and give you information. The easiest way to learn is sort of where there's no pressure to perform anything. You can listen to the language, listen to what we talk about, and then take it home and start to apply it and play with it. And hopefully it will give you some inspiration to be able to get stuff done. I am Joe Danya. I'm actually on the road again this weekend. We are testing still remote broadcasts. I'm in the middle of Andover, which is notoriously kind of like a black hole for cellular and internet coverage, but pushing the envelope. I gave it a 30% chance of working. And especially like last week, I was outside open air, and I had two bars of reception, and it was pretty good. Couple hiccups along the way. Now we got heavy atmosphere. We've got low clouds, and I'm indoors, and I've got two bars, so less of a chance of it happening. But it sounds pretty good. We had some pre-show testing, and it sounds pretty good. So thank you for everyone for joining me, and supporting this this new experimentation, including iHeart. iHeart's willing to put this stuff out here, and that's one of the undertakings where when we can sort of like give people sort of like some tolerance and some grace when they do things and sometimes come up short, and then we celebrate when they go long and things work out. But you got to be able to stomach and got to be able to tolerate when things don't go well to be able to get to the days when things are going to go well. So, the number one question I get when we're on the road and doing this is, the world has changed. What do I do? And they say it with a little bit of a fear in their voice. And I will tell you, the best climate for entrepreneurship is this: when there's a little bit of chaos, when there's a little bit of unknowns, when things are unsettled, it's up to us that want to take on big things and supply the safety for other people. That is the number one product that you could sell. You can ask salespeople, insurance people, if you want to deliver some safety to another person. That is one of the highest demand products that there ever was. So in a climate like this, it's easier to provide safety if you can figure out big problems, package solutions, and be able to have a good enough quality of product for people to say, you know what, I'm really thankful that I parted with that $2. I got $2 or better of product from the person who I purchased it from. And you repeat that cycle over and over. Now, not to be confused with opportunists, because I see a lot of people exchange money by not putting value into the marketplace. And that is not what I consider enterprising or entrepreneurship or business. That's just recycling. That's just, I don't know. It's so easy, and it's so like, I don't even know what to call it. It's just not my flavor of business. And I do see that out there, but that's not what I consider what we advocate here. So if you're an inventor or you walk into a building and say, you know what, this place really is lacking X. And then you go home and get excited about how you could put together a plan to provide X. That's what we're talking about, baby. That's the good stuff. I want to start by asking some questions or answering some questions. Listeners and listeners contribute via text message. So if you want to text me all program long, 333-1570 is a good way of getting on the program. I read all those texts and I answer all those texts. Number two question is, number one was what we do in this changed environment. Number two is about funding, PPP, EIDL, money, all that kind of stuff. And so we got hit with a couple of extensions on those of you who could apply for PPP money or EIDL. So let me take a second to explain what that does and how I feel about this. This is going to be where I give my opinion on how we interact with the financing of business. So when this coronavirus started, the federal government enabled the Small Business Association and some private banks to be able to extend funding for businesses and two specific different programs. The PPP loans were extended to businesses to apply for through your local banks. Okay, so Farmers was a participant, PNC was a participant, and so they got government funding to set aside a certain amount of money, and you were allowed to apply as a percentage of your payrolls and expenses. You are allowed to use this stuff to be able to pay your employees. Now, the deal is that a whole bunch of people went on unemployment all at one time, and they were swamping state systems for being able to distribute unemployment. So this was a good way to be able to take a portion of those people who are unemployed and collecting unemployment and route some funding through employers. So to keep those people off of swamping the unemployment system, people got to collect a paycheck. And at the same time, those employees, and they could be used to get a little bit of productivity, even though the marketplace couldn't provide 100% back to, you know, pre-coronavirus production. It was at least better than, you know, a productivity coming to a screeching halt. Because, I mean, once things return, it takes a while to jumpstart it and get that momentum back in play. And so, you know, this was a, I thought it was a really good idea. Now, the first round of PPP, if you watch the news, basically what and what happened is you had a glut of people that applied. They used up all of the money. Some of the bigger companies that, you know, used up some of the PPP money and never intended to pay an employee. See what happened with PPP. If you didn't use it for employees, then it was basically a loan that you took at 1% interest. So there were some people that had no intention of doing, you know, following the guidance of the actual program, which was paying payrolls. And then that money would then be forgiven because that's money that would have gone to state unemployment anyway. So they considered it a go through state or go through employers. And it was the same thing system wise. But those people who were just going to take it as a loan, people were pretty upset when they used up all of that money and now there wasn't a legitimate company who needed it for a payroll that then didn't have access to it. So they went around and did a second funding of that. And after everybody applied through, they actually had money left over. So they're still extending the PPP program beyond this. Now, there's some companies that maybe won't do that or, you know, don't have a need for it anymore. And that's why a lot of people have backed off. But in that first couple of months, I mean, the uncertainty, company Youngstown Computer, we laid off for the better part of a month. Just because all the companies we served came to a crashing halt, screeching halt. So there was nothing that we could do. So we went on unemployment for a little while. But when the PPP kicked in, we were able to bring everybody back and we've been back ever since. So that was a really good transitional program to get us back to work. And then, of course, you know, that stuff gets forgiven. So if you have not taken a PPP loan and there is money left over, and so if your company wants to take a loan and get the 1%, I think a lot of us will be a little bit more tolerant of you go getting that loan or go getting the PPP loan because you're not depriving somebody else of that money and you're still going to have to pay it back. So these aren't grants where, you're given money. So if a pizza place that made $1 billion with a profit takes one of these loans, as long as they don't deprive another person who needs it, they can take a loan at 1%. And they're going to have to pay it back, you know, eventually anyhow. So that's the PPP loan. There is money still available, and they have extended it even further. And the forgiveness portion of it, you'll have to check. Our bank is Farmers, and they've already gotten in touch with us. They've been amazing, by the way, getting in touch with us, giving the bullet points of what to do, how to stay compliant, rules to follow. They've just been great. And then as far as the EIDL, totally different. This comes directly from the Small Business Administration. So you apply, they check your business credit and your personal credit, and then you can get a loan. I believe it's now through $150,000 worth of capital, and you can use it for anything intra-business that it does not conflict with money that you took from the PPP. So you can't pay payrolls with EIDL money and pay payrolls with the EIDL or vice versa. You know what I mean? So anyway, those are basically how they fall. Now that is a true loan and it's a little bit higher interest. I believe that one is 3% interest for the first year. You don't have to pay anything back on it. And then you begin doing the repayment back. You know, I think they give you a 12 months cycle before you even have to consider paying it back. So if you're in a company where you're stuck finances wise. So maybe, you know, a couple good instances where you've got a bunch of receivables that are stuck because other people stopped paying your bills. And so you've got expenses. This is really good to sort of like take a low interest loan to fill in the gaps because you're going to collect those receivables at a certain point. It's not like they're lost. Now, I'm anti-debt when it comes to business. So you don't want to operate your business at a loss unless you are just filling in a gap. because all you're doing is you're using up future revenues. And if you don't know that there are going to be future revenues, that is a hard thing to overcome if you are leveraging yourself to a bunch of debt and not knowing whether or not your revenues are going to ever return. So if you have to take a pause and bail out for a little while, I would much rather you do that than, you know, have to file bankruptcy and risk losing the business in its entirety because you got leveraged a little too much. So that is my PPP EI Dale, and I believe both of them are still available. Again, the PPP is checking with your local bank to see if they're underwriting those loans. They're backed by the federal government, and then the EIDL is issued directly through the Small Business Association. You can go to sba.gov, and then they have a whole section dedicated to the EIDLs. I have a feeling, I mean, we waited every bit of 2 months after we applied for them to get to our application because there were literally millions of people who jumped on that, program as soon as it came out because everybody was terrified. Everybody, you know, that was like a lifeline for a lot of you. But I read every day about companies who are right now paying everything out of loans. And I feel for you. I know you want to keep the business going and get to better times, but you got to look at the what if, that if we're in this for another year and you rack up a couple $100,000 worth of fill-in money, even when things return, you are going to struggle. So I hope that even if you're willing to do it short term, that as you get a little bit long into this process, that you don't ruin your future prospects by going too much into hawk. I've listened to one company where they filled in payroll out of savings. Okay, so they didn't bother taking PPP. They just kept paying their people. They didn't want to lay anybody off. They went completely through their savings, and then they got to the end of this and found out that they couldn't do that forever. And then they end up doing the layoff. So all they ended up doing was layoffs still happened anyway, and now they have absolutely no recovery money on the other side, and they're completely starved out of being able to recuperate on the other side of this. So again, that's the information I have on both of those loan programs. I hope I answered that question. And I guess the next segment, I'll talk a little bit about this, but I wanted to set this up. So I know a lot of you who listen to this are in the sales industry. I love sales. I love, it's the highest paid sort of like enterprise, highest. So if you're a company owner, you're in sales, right? You are selling yourself, you're selling your products, you're selling your people, you're always in sales. And so there will never be more revenue generated in an industry than what sellers can. So I don't care if you're real estate, I don't care if you're retail, I don't care if you're in sales. But the sales industry has changed drastically because a lot of the strategies that salespeople use is connecting with other people. It's about relationships. It's about being in places. You know, nobody likes the cold caller. Nobody likes the spam emailer, right? So good salespeople don't resort to things that people hate. They put themselves in positions and make relationships and take care of people, and that's how the best sales happen. Well, think about when you're in this climate where you just can't go to a mixer. Right, you can't just walk in a front door and shake hands with people. You can't do any of the things that help you be a good seller. If it weren't for social media and your ability to go out there and actually still talk with people, then you would be completely at a pause. Thankfully, a lot of the industries that have sales, like real estate, for instance, are white hot right now. So even though you're at a disadvantage where you can't do the things that you normally would to drum up business, you still have a market that's delivering customers to you. And because it's so white hot, it's overcoming that where they're more or less coming to you than you having to go drum it out. But if not, let's just say it got a little bit neutral and you did have to go prospect your own stuff. You'd be working with a toolbox with about half of the tools that you're used to having to get those people to call you and whatever. And you have to resort to more aggressive tactics. I mean, my phone rings crazy. My text messaging rings crazy. My email rings crazy because of all of the people who are trying to reach me and sell me. And they don't have the ability to run into me in a public place, shake my hand and describe to me what they could do for me. Now they have to really get their message to me in a more, aggressive. And I don't prefer that way. Me as a seller, a person that's doing the sales, or the person then who's targeted in the strategy. I don't appreciate it on other sides, but I do appreciate it, a different kind of appreciation where I appreciate the level that they have to. It's like the alternatives disappear. So if you want to feed your family and you still want to make a living, you're going to have to resort to something that still puts a deposit in there. And that's the part of the appreciation that I still will tolerate it more now than ever because of that reasons. Because it's a struggle to still remain and do your normal thing in spite of everything that's happening around us. So I do want to dedicate some time and tap into maybe you guys out there. If you're a seller and you feel like your normal strategies are disadvantaged, share with me how you've overcome that. I notice a lot of you on social media are doing a whole lot more people that way. I don't know, is it enough? Have you gotten the same results? If the Chamber of Commerce had a mixer and I walked around and talked to 20 people, chances are that three or four of those people that I talk to, something will come out of it. I'll add a new number to my Rolodex, or somebody absolutely is looking for something that I'm selling. There's always some action that happens when I go to those mixers. I can't think of the last time that kind of action transpired somewhere in public. We've called on some meetings where I specifically found someone in public and invited them to my office so that we can talk business, but it hasn't been a natural consequence of just being in the same place. You have branches of your relationships. I can't remember the last time I added another branch. It's all been people that I already knew. So if you're just getting started in sales and you've got no book of business and you got to go out there and pursue people, how are you doing it? So text me 333-1570 and let me know what your strategies are. You can also call All Program Long as well, and I'll take your calls 330-729-9977. You're listening to the Bottom Line Business Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be right back.
I want to be a billionaire so freaking bad. Buy all of the things I never
had. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. I am Joe Danier, and I am your host, coming to you from Andover, Ohio, in the middle of a very rainy, dreary campground, dealing with cellular data with two bars. And Dave Price is making us making all this work behind the scenes. I appreciate everybody tuning in. And 330-729-9977 is the phone number. Get a hold of me. You can also text me all program long, 330-333-1570, fielding your questions about business and talking in general about the things that we're all dealing with as entrepreneurs. Every day, it seems like, especially last week, we just had an amazing negotiations week. Every day I'm meeting with businesses, of which some we're going to do business with. We have a couple of acquisitions. We have a couple of projects, our own, that are going to be coming to fruition. So you get to learn not necessarily just through lecture and talking about the topics, but you get to watch me do a couple of these things in real time. A couple of companies that, you know, we're going to do this publicly, where when we help either coach or we help invest, or we help write new business plans and models, then you get to come along with us for the ride. And then a lot of you who are in this kind of watch what's happening in front of you. And as we narrate what we go through, you can say, okay, well, in my head, it seemed harder. In real life, it's not as difficult. It's sort of like half math, where you have the logical part of your brain has to calculate how numbers work. And then you have the other part, the imaginative side, where we get to create things and we get to picture things in our head and try to recreate those in the real life. And that's what I love most about business, is you get to have both sides of those brains, and not one side is better than the other. Where a lot of you creative types who make music and art and poetry and writing have trouble monetizing it, because the other part, the numbers part, is what you're deficient in. And so you got to match up with someone who can help fill in the other part of your brain, where it still has to make financial sense, but neither side gets to win, because both are equally as important. I've watched a lot of people struggle because they thought that the logical side was better than the imaginative, and you create a brand that's just terrible and non-exciting, and have people that are exciting but can't make money doing it. And both are a little bit of a sin, because there's enough information or people to partner with or be coached from that can help you get through whatever you're struggling with. But it's really hard for some of us to take we feel vulnerable about the things that we're not good at, and we won't admit that we're not good at them. So it's hard to go out there and seek a solution and find somebody to fill in your gaps when you won't admit that you have some. So a lot of businesses will spend 20 years figuring out how that they need help from other people and connect from other people before they put up their hands and ask for help. And by that point, you just wasted time is all. So come to terms quickly that you're going to have some deficiencies, and be willing to go out in the marketplace and pay to have those deficiencies filled. And that's why I said last week, you know, your accountants and your attorneys and all of these people that provide services, find ways of getting them, you know, their value, their money. Don't deprive people of cash. Don't deprive people of making a living, because all you end up doing is depriving yourself of making that safe living. But when I go out there and I try to discover where people and help them make more money, then more money comes back my way. And it's just this never-ending cycle of everybody realizing a bigger potential and be able to make more money. So this question, and I did put out in the last segment, that if you are a salesperson and you have created new strategies for this new environment and they're successful, don't worry about sharing them thinking that your fellow competition is going to steal them and now you're going to make less money. One thing I've learned about the business, you know, or the business climate, is there is plenty of market share for everyone. You cannot lose an idea to other people. All that can happen is if you give freely, you get freely. And I'm telling you, we made whole quicker that way. So if you have some strategies, want to share them with our audience, help your fellow salespeople, please share with the program and let us know what you're doing to make things better in your world. And let me assure you, I can't say this enough. I got in this industry knowing that my computer industry was tough to work with, and it's still my objective to bring people together and make more business happen because of cooperation. All right, 330-729-9977, or you can text me, 333-1570. You're listening to the Bottom Line Business Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. I am Joe Danier, your host, and we're talking about things that are happening in the enterprising entrepreneur world. Intention of the show is to kind of inform you, give you a nice non-pressure place to talk and listen about things that might be advanced. You might be a seasoned vet in business, and so this stuff is just in your wheelhouse. Invite all of you to the program. Tons and tons of good mentors that are out in our area, and a lot of you that are just warming up to it and getting ready to it. All of you, welcome to this program. So 330-729-9977. Text me at 333-1570. And the question that's out there right now is, if you are a salesperson and you've adjusted your strategies to still do business, and what you've had to change differently because you just don't have places to go to shake hands and talk to people like you normally would. And I appreciate all of you that's sticking with the show with the occasional choppiness and cutouts and stuff like that. We are broadcasting from Gust Bus. Purchased this RV in the spring. Didn't really intend to buy an RV, but since every other option immediately dissolved as far as getting away and recuperating and breaking away like that, this was the best option. And I can do broadcast from it. So we're testing it. And if I were going on a road and just be able to do broadcast from the road, would it be possible? And you guys are participating in the guinea pigging experiment, whether or not you can even pull this off. We picked a couple of the campgrounds that are more remote areas of Ohio. And so there's really good ones. Like you go to a campground in the middle of Nashville and they've got great internet, and you got one that are in, Ashtabula, Ohio, and not so great, away from a highway especially. So thank you. I appreciate it. And thanks for tolerating this experiment a little bit. And so when I bought this, the RV, then I had to start thinking, okay, well, I need to store this. So then I started thinking about, where I was going to store this thing, and looked at indoor storage facilities, building a carport. And my mind started going about, okay, well, there's a little bit of a vacuum, a little bit of vacancy in the marketplace where aren't a lot of storage places. So I thought, my enterprising head kicked in and said, well, if I'm in the position where I would purchase or lease or rent a storage facility, there's got to be other places, people that maybe can't find one and don't have the resources to build one, and they just get stuck having this great asset and no place to put it. So I started thinking, okay, well, I'm going to build a storage facility, and I'm going to scale it where, you know, I need a place to store it anyway. I'm going to build mine plus a couple for me to lease out and see if we can get things going. And this is one of the projects I'm working on going into the fall, where I found a friend and fellow business owner that had a restaurant. And the restaurant struggled in the beginning of this COVID, ended up shutting down. And now he'd totally like to offload the property. And because of the expansion of enterprises, especially being at the property as a restaurant, even if it's on a primary corner in a perfect location where it would do really well, you know, sales or the demand for product properties and business like that is probably pretty stagnant right now. So I figured if I need some property and building it at the same time where I can partner up with another entrepreneur, I might be able to benefit from developing some land and creating some revenue on that land and partnering with the eventuality if I create something in the RV field where not only am I doing storage, but I'm doing supplies and I'm doing RV washing and I'm doing RV fueling. And maybe I'll have somebody that comes down and does service work on all the RVs that are stored there. I'm picturing these, you know, multiple storage buildings, plus all of the amenities that come along with overnight travelers and the needs that they might have. And then eventually you have enough people there, then a restaurant is justified. So we might go, you know, a property that is perfect for a restaurant might be incorporated in an overall, having that be the end cap of a plan. So I'll share that with you. We're in the negotiation. We're just putting the idea together and stuff like that, but I'll get to share my own endeavor with you publicly as well. Question also is this is about a trade and being able to work function within a trade business. So what that means is if you open a heating and cooling company and you are not only owning the company, but you are also practicing the service. So you are the number one employee. And we see a lot of singly owned, one person owns the company, and single employee, where you are the only employee in that company. And there's a lot of those out there. Small business, that's what we do. And now, what I was told in the very beginning, and I did the same thing, was when you open a single employee, single operation, there's a really good chance that you get trapped in your own company. And because you will be your best employee, willing to do whatever within that company, versus your competition who opens a heating and cooling company and they hire out every position from their very get-go. They don't work operations. Now, they could work operations, but they end up doing it. Well, a lot of us who start companies, well, we started the company because we need money, right? How much money can I generate to pay myself and keep the company afloat? Well, if you stop working, then the money stops going, and what do? You didn't create any of the cash, which was the purpose. So when anybody asks me whether or not if you work in operations, you have to just be very careful not to get yourself trapped. So what that means is you might be willing to be the sole producer, but remember, you got to put on all the hats. You got to be also the marketer. You got to be the person that does hiring and firing. You got to be the person that does the books and accounting. You got to be the one that prospects for new work, right? If you're in the field doing all of the actual revenue generating, then your planning and running the company is not happening. And so you're going to see really slow growth. You're going to see some hardships that you would otherwise not have. And it feels like in the moment, well, you're generating revenue. Well, if you waste 5 years, and that's what I did. I wasted 5 years trying to be my own everything before I started really taking serious, hiring it out. I made the pain last for 5 years when the pain might have only been one season or one quarter or something like that. I stretched it out and made it painful for a couple years. So that's my only warning, is don't get yourself trapped into operations when you really need to be at the head of the table, making decisions, doing growth, expanding, making your company more strong. Because one thing you learn about business, you're either growing or dying, and that's a true statement. You're decaying and you're losing market share and your processes are struggling and your product is struggling if you're not developing them. That's what will always happen. So again, what a lot of us will do is maybe we're willing to work for the first year sole guy, right? Get as much money out of it as you can. And then you need to share, you're going to at some point have to share revenues with that new employee. That's the hardest break, is that first employee, because you're going to make less, you're going to work just as much, and you're going to see them getting paid, with every cycle here. And they're not going to work as hard as you. They're not going to, you know, be willing to do as much as you are. So that's why it's the hardest, because, you know, you're still going to work every bit as hard, but you're going to have to do it with less money. I took such a huge pay cut when I made that first deal, and it lasted so long that now, getting back to where, I'm making what would be an industry standard for the positions that I hold, You know, I made it, like I said, I made it last 5 years of torture. So that's, again, don't do that to yourself and trap yourself within your own company. You make the rules and just make sure that you hire out. And when you formulate your product, you have to build the labor into every product. You have to build your marketing. You have to build your research and development. Everything that you want to happen, you build in the product. If you basically get business because you're undercutting your competition, there's going to be something that you're not going to be able to pay for because you took that out of the cost. You got the business, but now you actually have to provide the service at a number that's probably lower than everybody else. So you don't want to do that. That should not be your first strategy, is to just do it for less rate, because there's probably a reason that somebody else is charging it, because it takes a certain amount of marketing to be able to get that business or perform that business, or tools or experience or labor or any of that stuff. So again, that's my recommendation, is don't starve yourself and don't be your only employee. Build in, you know, let's just say 20% of the product cost is being able to pay a person. You got to build what you want to pay people into the cost of your product. And then when you make sales, you have that built in, to to your revenue. Another question is whether or not to involve yourself in social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, all of that kind of stuff. And this kind of tags on to what we talked about earlier, is the strategies of social media allow salespeople to connect with other people when physical interactions aren't, available. You can't do the same stuff. So I would absolutely participate, log in, find those connections, and find legitimate means of trying to not just hawk your products, right? That is the most annoying thing on social media, is when someone friend requests you or makes a connection with you and immediately jumps on you and tries to make the sale. Put yourself out there in what you do and talk about what you do in the marketplace. Use social media to be able to make people understand where your expertise lies. If the first thing out of your mouth is the deal that, you selling the product or what it costs or click here to... Everybody tunes that stuff out anyway. It's not effective. We get hit with that all the time, and you're just going to get penalized because no one's going to take you serious. But if you give to get, if you take some, one of the first things I did as a computer guy was I went on the radio and helped people solve their problems and did it, for no money, right? I gave stuff away. And what I gave away was information that can help people, be better computer users. And so you're in an industry like the financial industry, realtors are a tough one, but why not go on social media and tell people hints and tips about the biggest, sort of investment that some people have and how to make the best of it, right? Give that information away, show that you care, show that you've got expertise, win people over because of what you're willing to give them for free, and let those people come to you now that they trust you. And they know that you have the expertise. When they have a thing, they're going to think of you because you're the one that was in their ear, willing to give them information. And they trusted you because that the information was good, sound, accurate, and it held up to scrutiny. So that's the way you should be using social media, is give to get. That's absolutely Joe's philosophy on business here. Those other people, those takers, those people who take the value out of things without giving things in, it's a short stint. You could pull it off for a little bit, but in the long term, you will always lose. You always got to replant after you harvest, and always give more than you take. Next thing is this question came about selling off equity or selling off a portion of a business, and what preparations that you would do. And that's a common thing. And we started this program almost because we had a bunch of people who are ready to retire. And rather than being able to sell, they just shut things down. I watched a whole warehouse. The guy tried to sell for 2 years. Nobody interested. Family couldn't take it over. Nobody was interested in taking up the reins. And he gave up. He just let, millions of dollars of worth of market activity just evaporate, which... It doesn't stay evaporated for long. Somebody fills the role, but it's just a sin. You have 20, 30, 40 years worth of somebody's hard work that's already been done, and then somebody's going to have to come into the marketplace and just start over. And so it was kind of sinful to watch those jobs disappear and that stuff disappear just because somebody couldn't find a buyer. And so when you're setting your, either you're selling a portion of your business because you need some money and you're using the value of your business to draw out, almost like taking a loan on what it is that you do. Remember, once you give that equity up, it's hard to get it back. One of the biggest blessings I had from day one is that no matter how many times I had offers to purchase equity in my company, and even early on when I had a bunch of debt and there was a reason that, you know, raising money would have been a good thing, I turned it down because I wanted to remain 100% ownership of the stuff that I had. And so I'm glad, really glad, that I made that decision. And so once you give that equity, you might, you know, constantly be needed to be supplied with a new round of funding every time that erodes what you own in your business. And eventually you're going to be doing the same stuff. Look around, you have 10% of your business. So everything that comes in goes out to these people who gave you money up front. So if you're going to do that, if you're going to trade equity, make sure that value grows. So if you own 50% of a $1 million company, when you take that 50% and invest it, make sure you grow it by double so that you maintain still total ownership. So if you don't grow the company and you just take it and buy something that doesn't add total value, all you did was dilute what you owed and now let somebody else in to own it at a discount. So make sure that you're safe with that. So the things that you could do that people that, you know, buy stuff. I mean, two ways that I know of people that value. So you have book value on a company. What if you physically sold the assets, what you'd have left? And then you have sort of like what the revenues that the company generates that you can claim. So, you know, if there's nothing special about a company, most times someone will offer you like the building and the inventory and the stuff that it has. And that's a pretty reasonable thing. You have $1 million worth of stuff and I'll give you $1 million worth of stuff. Your customers don't, you know, aren't very valuable. So really what you generate in assets is really all that's there. But there's some companies that their customer base is worth way more than the stuff because they're hard to acquire. And so you buy 1,000 customers for way more than it would the buildings and the stuff that's owned in inventory. So that's kind of stuff that, it, depending on the industry, where you should put your effort. So good questions. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. 330-729-9977, or you can text me at 333-1570. We're taking a break. We'll be back. This is the Bottom Line Business Show on 570 WKBN. All right, welcome back, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. I am Joe Danier, your host, talking about things that are happening in enterprise and with entrepreneurs, answering some of your questions out there. And these are always great because they're coming right from the sort of like the mouths of and the most practical advice that I can give is when you're actually fielding out a problem. So the last question that we had through email is acquiring your competition. And this kind of goes in line with what we just talked about a minute ago about preparing your company and things that you can do when you get to get an offer to make it more sellable is to kind of package it so that people, you know, it's valuable to the people who you're selling it to. If it's hard to get customers in your industry, then your customers are most valuable. So you package your company so you're delivering customers. If infrastructure and inventory is more important, then you package it towards inventory and infrastructure. But this is the opposite side. Now you're the pursuer. Is it much easier for you to use your marketing to get customers, or is it easier for you to buy up your competition and get customers? And there's going to be a dollar value that allows you to do both. So if you're got good retained earnings and you've put some cash aside, and you could make you could make a little bit of an offer on one of your competitors, and you know that they do well, they sit aside alongside you, and they're equal to where you are, and you can double up. What would it cost you? So let's just say, fictitious numbers, but you have 1,000 customers that are worth about $500,000 worth of business. So your business cycle is that they deal with you twice a year and the average ticket price is X and X equals 500,000. How much would you make offering on something that can generate $500,000 worth of revenue, right? Versus doing the exact same thing, but going and picking off those customers and creating those customers on your own, add the dollar value. So if they're at equal price and one you can do in one fell swoop and one that's going to take you 3 years, what would I tell you? Well, if you got the cash and you've got the infrastructure, like if you look around and you see employees that are sitting around doing nothing or 50% capacity, then bringing in a whole bunch of customers all at one time that you can field off, awesome. Most of us, though, will grow our company at the same rate that we have ability to provide the service. So if you can service 100 customers, it's usually easier to go get those 100 customers than to buy 10,000 customers and everything that comes along with your competition. But I've seen it be done in both ways, or I've seen it been done both ways, and equally I've seen it work out and not work out in equal proportions. So that's just something that you've got to decide whether or not you can handle the influx of new business and be able to take, you know, you're going to have to redo all processes. You're going to have to get all new customers ready for your way of doing business when you're taking them from another company. I've seen, and this is probably the easiest way, I saw a company buy a competitor, but then still operate that competitor with their name, their processes as an independent thing. And over the years, then, you know, condition those customers into a new way of doing things. And it might take 10 years. But again, it's a mathematical thing, whether or not that's good for you and your business and your industry, depending on what the rate of acquisition and the cost of those acquisitions are. So I appreciate that question. Thank you. And so just like I started off the show telling you what the function of this show is, I want to tell you that in the beginning, we said we were going to take some real live things and talk to those people, do these very public versions of it. And so far, behind the scenes, we've talked to a lot of people who are a little reluctant about coming and doing them publicly. And so, you know, I'm still working on the process of getting people comfortable with doing this in front of you, talking about money, talking about investments. Because a lot of people are afraid that when they do this thing publicly, either you're going to ridicule them and criticize them, and they're not ready for that. These are vulnerable situations, and or you're going to steal their idea and go off on the marketplace and do it yourself. So you can see how some people are a little bit hesitant to talk to me and agree to do this publicly. If you've noticed, I use a lot of these hypotheticals. I don't give you the names and situations for that reason. For, you know, they're not comfortable with me saying. So we got to generally describe what we're dealing with and generally talk about those solutions and, you know, using those metaphors to fill in the gaps where we can teach the principle. But we do have a couple people, because once we make that investment, it's a Joe deal. And a lot of these people, us talking about them publicly, will actually be good for their model. But I wanted to share that with you because that was something that caught me off guard. I talked to a guy that was going to do detailing in an industry that was kind of like, I've never heard of detailing in that industry. And I said, hey, do you want to talk about this publicly? And he totally bugged out and went into a different direction. He didn't like the public spotlight. You know, he's talked to me on a personal level, but was not comfortable talking with me on a public level. And I guess it does take a strong soul to hash out his private stuff in a public setting. So I do appreciate it. And I do ask that anybody listens to this program, and I'm not asking you to be, I'm not asking you to be disingenuous. I want you to be authentic, but I also don't want to be too harsh on people either. So if somebody decides to share with us on this program, let's offer some kindness, because the goal is to make all of us better. And so if somebody shares a little bit of them and you shoot them down, they're not going to be real eager to share again. So we got to be a little bit graceful. We got to extend a little bit of grace to people, because it's one thing I do through coaching is that we all make mistakes. We all do dumb things, and it's really hard to admit when we do them. But the quicker we admit to those things, the quicker we can get help from people who are capable of helping. But it takes that kindness and that willingness to be a little bit gentler with people to bring that out in them. All right. Great show, everybody. I appreciate the participation and the questions. We'll be right back with the Youngstown Computer Show next.